Hi, everyone. Thank you for tuning into the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. It's April 2018, and you're listening to episode 69 of Postmodern Realities. And I'm Melanie Cogdill, managing editor of the Christian Research Journal. On this episode, I'm joined by John Dyer. John is the executive director of communications and educational technology and adjunct professor of media arts and worship at Dallas Theological Seminary. John has been a technology creator for more than 15 years, building tools used by Facebook, Google, Apple, the Department of Defense, and the Digital Bible Society. He has written on technology and faith for many publications and is the author of the book, From the Garden to the City, The Redeeming and Corrupting Power of Technology. In the 2017 volume 40, number 5 issue of the Christian Research Journal, John wrote a feature article called The Virtualization of Culture and the Need for an Embodied Christian Alternative. John, it's good to have you on.
It's great to be here.
Well, how did you get interested in technology? Have you always been a techie? I know I've benefited greatly when I read your book a couple of years ago. So I'd like to hear more of the personal backstory to how you got interested in technology.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in the 80s, so there was a fun kind of tech boom, and home computers were first things you could buy for the first time. And so my dad would buy those, and he would bring home all the little extra cards that you would stick in there to make it do new things. And so I've always loved, you know, tinkering with things, whether it was Legos or just any kind of building things. And so I would try to, you know, make little video games when I was in middle school and high school. And in those times, that wasn't very cool, so I didn't really do it publicly. But, you know, when I took my first job as a youth pastor, kind of in the late 90s, I needed a job. And so I had done just enough computers to fake my way into a web company. And so I started doing that and have been doing web development for a long time. So I've always kind of had a hand in technology and just really enjoyed all the fun that it is to make new stuff.
So I know that, you know, when it comes to technology, that Christians usually have two extreme views. They either kind of are uncritical and they accept everything, or they see it as inherently bad and evil, and that really we should not be involved with any technology, and kind of just the debates about, you know, we should not allow our children to be on technology. And when I'm speaking of technology, I'm thinking of like computers and devices and video games and gaming systems and so forth. So how, broadly speaking, would you explain the relationship between technology and the Christian faith?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, you're right that there's a lot of concern, particularly for parents. You know, we're concerned about all the bad things that it brings. On the other hand, we love the good stuff. And so sometimes the perspective that you get is that technology itself is just kind of neutral. So you picture it as being like just a big giant pipe. And as long as we're putting Jesus stuff through it, and the bigger the pipe, the better. And we just want to avoid the bad things there. But I think for me, if I was to just summarize briefly, what I'd want to do is go back, and instead of saying, you know, is technology good or is it bad or is it neutral, I would want to start with the idea of technology being a good thing as part of the Bible's culture mandate and call to creativity. So when God says to make things from the earth and to cultivate and care for it, I think he's envisioning us making things. And in fact, you see right after Adam and Eve made their clothing, God shows them how to make it better. There's all kinds of theology in there, but I think there's also God's just care for making things. So I think God deeply cares about our creativity. So that part of it's good. The thing that I would want to focus on is thinking about how whenever we implement some kind of new technology or tool, it's always going to have some transformative effect on us and the world around us. So it's going to bring us some good things, but it's also going to bring us some things that aren't really morally good or bad, but are going to change things. And the illustration I often give is of something simple like using a shovel. When you dig a hole, you know, you change the world in some way, but you are also changed. So your hands get blisters and calluses. And so anytime we use something, we're going to be transformed. And so is our community around us. For us, we certainly want to avoid the bad, evil stuff, and we want to try to do the good things. But I think we also want to be thoughtful about the other ways that technology is transforming us.
I really do like that illustration of what is technology. That really challenged me when you just talked about it being a tool. And I had never really thought of that, because I think most Christians think of technology in terms of electronics, mm-hmm. right? So your definition is a lot more broad. And, you know, you just briefly said that there's some negative things, but before we, you know, kind of list some of those negative things or the challenges that technology in terms of electronic communication and different things like that, that we think of normally as technology, what can you tell us that are some good things that you see about technology?
Yeah. So, I mean, if we think about maybe the last couple hundred years, we have all kinds of wonderful things happening where people are living longer lives. There's much lower, you know, infant mortality rates. People are often able to be healed from things. You know, they can, the blind are seeing and the lame are walking. So there's a lot of lovely things there. You know, there's lower poverty rates overall in the world. So technology broadly has brought us a lot of things. You know, electronic technology and social media and the internet and all those kinds of things. You know, I think there's a lot of great, you know, resources for, there's more availability of scripture and of good teaching. All of those things are out there. I think in the recent years, you know, even though it's been really, really heartbreaking to see, I think some forms of evil that, like say the Me Too movement, I think we see that, I think social media has contributed to uncovering some darkness there and has allowed for some good things. The same thing with a lot of racial justice, I think, in our country today, that social media has contributed to those things. So I think there are a lot of fun things. And I think if we get past some of the dark ones, there's just a lot of really fun, cool things on the internet. I mean, there's drones delivering packages and self-driving cars and all that stuff is just really fun. Although we also need to talk about the dark stuff too.
Yes. Yeah, so what are concerns that you have specifically, not just about technology, but how it relates to faith?
Yeah. I mean, we'll get into kind of the details of the specific thing I was bringing up in the article. I mean, I think that I share the same concerns that most parents and people do of, you know, pornography and bullying, of all the kinds of cybercrime that's happening. And, you know, in our recent election, we saw all kinds of things that were happening there with tampering with American thought, and that's happening all over the country. So I think all of those are there. You know, I have young kids, they're in first and third grade. So I'm really concerned with, you know, raising them in a way that they're able to be thoughtful about their technology. I want to, you know, protect them from evil things and from evil people. But I also want to teach them how to use it and not just protect them. So I don't want to send them out when they're 18 and having never made a failure before. I want to let them fail safely here. But I think one of the other, you know, big ones beside those just kind of obviously immoral things, I think one of the big concerns I often have is just the speed of things, where it doesn't leave a lot of room for us to be human. So if I think about just thinking itself, you know, we all see articles shared by our friends all day, and, you know, we might kind of read the headline and skim it, but we don't even have the time just to read an article, or even if we do, the time to sit and contemplate. I think too, I think about myself when I'm in a line at Home Depot or something like that, and my first instinct is to reach for my pocket and pull out my phone and do something during that time. And so I don't really have a lot of room for boredom in my life. And really, I think our greatest creativity comes when we're bored. You know, when we're in the, you know, the shower may be the one place in our life where we can't bring our phones. And now that they're waterproof, we can, I suppose. But those areas where we're bored, I think our mind fills that and creates things. And so God's, you know, call to be creative, we sometimes turn that off by filling every last minute with a device. So I think the ease that we make things that we didn't even know existed a couple years ago become necessities, like phones, for example. If you've ever tried to go somewhere without your maps, your Google Maps, and tried to go to the same place twice, you might see just how dependent we've become on some of the devices. So I think some of it is the big evil things are certainly there, but it's some of the more subtle reshaping of our lives that I think is really, in particular for Christians who want to have a deep faith and a deeply contemplative life, it's that speed and ever presence of technology that can even be scarier for us.
I know you say Google Maps. I remember in the old days when I was in college in Los Angeles, it's like I had this thick Thomas Brothers guide, and I was like old school trying to find stuff and look it up in this big, huge, giant map. And so Google Maps does definitely make our life a lot easier, although sometimes it takes us someone and says, you've arrived, and it's you haven't arrived to where you're supposed to be.
sure does.
But I want to talk a little bit about your article. Now, your article opens up and tells this very interesting story that I'd like you to tell about this guy named Chuck McCarthy who starts this unique business. And because he starts this business, I am wondering if technology undermines traditional forms of community, especially for Christians, the local church. So I thought we could just start talking about just even your intro.
Yeah. So in the intro, it's a story about Chuck McCarthy, and he's he calls himself the people walker. And so he would, for $7 an hour, he would walk a person around. And the idea was, it seemed like people in Los Angeles were just so kind of lonely. Sometimes they were scared to walk somewhere, and he's kind of a big guy with a beard. But sometimes they just needed someone to be around them. And so, you know, LA is one of the biggest cities in the world and seems to be so fun, but it seems that people are missing some type of connection. And so that got me thinking about what else was going on in our world. Why do we feel disconnected and placeless? And so, you know, you asked about technology undermining traditional community. And I think, you know, certainly there's great ways that Facebook and other kinds of social media or Snapchat or Musical.ly or whatever it is that you're into can kind of augment you being able to see something about someone when they're not around. And at the same time, sometimes they eventually can replace some of the meetings that we would have. And that's really what I wanted to get at in this article, is start to talk about the ways when we replace something that we used to do in the physical world with something virtual, that doesn't destroy us immediately, but it starts to contribute altogether to something that I would think of as called maybe placelessness.
So can you explain your title to us? You know, part of the title is The Virtualization of Culture. So can you unpack that for us and then also describe what you mean by the word culture? Because that can have a variety of meanings.
Yeah. So by culture, I'm not talking about, you know, say high culture like symphonies or low culture like pop music. I mean this broad idea of the things that we make in the world and how what we make in the world then also remakes us. So we all exist in a variety of different cultures, depending on maybe what area of the country we're in or what kind of job we are. Our family has its own kind of culture. Our home does, maybe based on our race or ethnicity. All those are kind of overlapping to shape us. And so the easiest one to see probably is language, that when we have someone with a similar accent to us, we feel a kinship to them. And when we don't, there's a little bit of separation. But there's also a whole set of other things that we do and the way that we say what's in our living room, for example. We could look around, we could say all those things that we place there kind of shape our day and shape what we value. So what I'm using culture then is all of the objects and images and rituals and all the things around us that kind of make us who we are and that reshape us. And then what I'm using the word virtualization to mean is anytime we take one of those things that we used to do sort of mostly physically, and then we start to do those in a virtual way. And those can be really, really helpful, but they can also sometimes take away something from us.
You're listening to the Postmodern Realities Podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest is John Dyer, and in the volume 40, number 5, 2017 issue of the Christian Research Journal, he wrote a feature article called The Virtualization of Culture and the Need for an Embodied Christian Alternative. To read more cultural discernment articles like this one, please subscribe to the journal. A 6-issue subscription is now at a new lower price of $33.50. And to subscribe, go to our website at equip.org. So you were defining for us a few moments ago both the word culture and virtualization. And so what is it that culture in specific has been virtualized?
Yeah, so I give a couple of examples in the article, and I'll mention one of them is music. So if we were to think about, you know, a little over 100 years ago, there really was no, you know, recorded music. So if somebody was talking about music, they really meant to go to a concert or to hear somebody pull out the banjo, like in Little House on the Prairie or something like that. So music was always an experience between two physically embodied people. And, you know, later on, music becomes recorded, and then somehow that changes the relationship between the artist and the listeners. But most of the time, if you're listening to music in, say, the early part of the 20th century, you're going to be with a group all listening together. So music is still this kind of like communal process. But once the Walkman was invented, you know, back in maybe the 70s or 80s, and there's headphones, all of a sudden music is now this very individual experience. And so if we were to talk about music today, we would probably think about a streaming service or something where we'd go out, and music is now a commodity that you can buy in the same way that you buy, you know, bananas or video games or something like that. It's just something you get. It's not so much an experience of people anymore. So that's wonderful. We're exposed to all kinds of music, but it definitely is a different kind of experience today, what music is. I mentioned a couple other things. Like just the way we talk about memory, a lot of times, you know, we log onto Facebook and it reminds us of something in the past. And so most of our even concept of memory is more about what's on the device. And so we're afraid of losing those pictures. So we've offloaded even our ideas about memory to something that is digital. And so we could go on and think about things like dating, for example, instead of meeting someone at a church or at a park or at a bar or something like that, we're going to start with the online process. And that can be a really great way to meet people today, especially with all the great new, you know, services that can connect people based on their personality. And yet again, when we look back at our lives and we say, well, how did you meet? Instead of having like a place with a smell and a location, we remember the app, right? And so again, all of these things that make up our lives, when we do all of them online, eventually we start to lose kind of our connection to the world. And that's what I mean by our virtualization.
And too, when you think of not just dating, but all of our different behaviors online, so much of that is, you know, based on, it's kind of cataloged and made into, you know, different algorithms that are trying to figure out what our behavior is. And it seems very outside of ourselves, of who we are. You talk about in the article about displacement and the idea that that we can feel disconnected. I mean, obviously from your first story about the guy that's the human, you know, kind of company that you can rent. But you also say that displacement is also in scripture. Can you explain a little bit about what you mean by that?
Yeah. So, you know, the opening story of Chuck, you know, he's walking these people that seem like they're feeling disconnected. And I'm arguing that that's partly because we're doing so many things online. And we don't have this groundedness. But if we look in, you know, a lot of the biblical story, it opens with Adam and Eve and they have a place, the Garden of Eden, and then they're displaced. They're kind of kicked out of that. And so the rest of their garden, the rest of their lives is trying to find kind of a way back to that, to be replaced again. And we see this again with, you know, the story of Abraham. God has asking him to leave the land where he came from to go somewhere else. So this process of being displaced and then coming back again is built into Abraham. It's, of course, built into the Israelites as they're stuck down in Egypt for a long time before they get back to their home. But then later on, of course, they become exiles again. And so Jesus, too, we could even see in him, you know, he, the eternal Son of God has been in harmony in the Trinity, and he is displaced as he comes down to be with us before getting to return. So that movement seems like it's built into the logic of Scripture, that one day we'll find our new home in the heavens and the earth. But in the meantime, it seems as though God has given us these physical anchor points in the world. That means we are still spiritual beings, but he seems to be saying that our physicality is deeply important to who we are today while we're in the process of displacement.
The second part of your title of your article is the need for an embodied Christian alternative. Can you explain to us why this is important, not only in Scripture, but also today in our, you know, tech-driven society?
Yeah. So, you know, one of the parallel stories we gave was the Israelites when they're first coming out of Egypt. You know, they almost kind of want to go back, right? They everything was familiar about that culture, and they're just out in the middle of the desert and they feel uncomfortable. They don't have anything to sort of hang on to. And so God is preparing with Moses all these temples and objects and things for them that will anchor them, but they don't want to wait for it. And so they end up creating the golden calf, right? Because they need something physical there, even though God was going to provide that for them. So we know that God knows that this is important for us. And then in the New Testament, God has given us, at least the church, a lot of freedom, but he's given us a couple of things, namely, you know, baptism and communion that are kind of physical anchor points for us in the world that we're even replaying in baptism and in communion Jesus's own kind of displacement and replacement, his death and his resurrection, his blood and his filling of us. So I think that Christianity has this answer sort of built into it about the need for slowing down and doing something like communion that is physical for us.
Well, obviously, you know, when we think about our faith, we sometimes view it as a communication event. Like we tell someone the truth of the gospel, we tell someone about Christ, and you just talked about Christianity having these very physical elements to it in the sacraments of the Lord's Supper and the baptism. And so in light of that, how can Christians offer embodiment to the world as an alternative to technology?
Yeah, I think when we're thinking about our church service and our practices, depending on our denominational background, we may already have that built in to some degree. And I think it is important for us to be speaking, you know, the language of the culture, which is often technological, right? So we do want to be using those things and implementing them. We want to think about how technology can help us stay connected during the week with people. But I think at the same time, there is sometimes a temptation to want to add, you know, more spectacle to our services and to the times that we're together. But I think that one of the unique things that we have to offer people is to be the people who are capable of slowing down, to be the people who are capable of looking at you across the table in the eye and listening for just an hour. And it seems like Jesus himself was so capable of listening well, of hearing people, of seeing them. And in our, you know, fast-paced world, it seems like there's very few people who can just sit down and listen and hear from people. So if you can, you know, keep your phone in your pocket or your purse or wherever it goes and just listening to somebody, that can be one of the most, you know, kind of life-giving things that you can do for somebody. And then in our church services, I think I am seeing down, you know, where I am, a lot of churches that you know, are in kind of the non-denominational sort of non-tradition area that really often maybe had communion maybe once or twice a year. They're starting to say, man, maybe this is something that I want to re-implement as a regular practice and see, even though that it's very slow and it's inefficient and it's everything that technology isn't, it's also this thing that people seem to be craving. They seem to want something that allows them to move up to the front or have something in their hands to remind them of who Jesus is and what he's done for us. So I think I would say, broadly speaking, in churches, thinking through the physicality of your service and what it means. And then as individuals, just to be able to slow down, to really look someone in the eye and listen to them.
Besides just slowing down, what can you recommend to families to do to just be able to be more present in their relationships?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that in our own, you know, family, our kids don't yet have their own devices, so that makes things a lot easier. But I think having some, you know, device-free time where you're able to practice some type of some rhythm of Sabbath, whether that's a literal full day without screens or devices in some way. But doing that together in a kind of a communal practice, because technology is very, very good at doing things in a custom way for an individual, but doing practices that are for a community are a little bit harder. So I think, you know, turning off the devices sometime, and as parents, what we're often unaware of is that we're the ones who are modeling things for our kids so poorly. So we're the ones who are always on our devices, and we think we have an excuse for work or something like that. But our kids will of course learn from that. So family time, I do think that, trying to come up with some types of, you know, just other things that we can do that don't necessarily require device time. And then when we do have device time, for me and my family, we really try to emphasize using devices for creativity rather than just for consumption. So I'm really okay with my kids spending as much time as they want on a computer if they're writing something or painting or drawing or doing something of that nature, just because I would do the same thing if they were drawing with paper and pen. But if they said, I want to watch a show or play a game or something like that, that's the thing that I would limit. So just a little side note for parents, I don't really think the category of screen time is super helpful. I would want to think about it more in terms of creativity versus consumption, or thinking about it as, are you doing this as an individual, or are you doing something with someone? So again, just thinking toward creativity and community rather than individual and consumption.
Wow, that's really interesting, especially about screen time, because I know we talk about screen time in our family. I have two children, and my oldest is in college, and we just made a decision as a family, just for a variety of reasons, not to give him a smartphone until he graduated high school. And I mean, he still had social media on his computer, but he wasn't on it very often. And I was really challenged recently. He came home for a break and he told me that he got rid of a lot. Well, first of all, he got rid of Snapchat altogether. He just thought that was a waste of time. But then other, you know, social media platforms that he had, he just got rid of it off of his phone. He said, you know, it just tends to fritter away at your time. And he said he realized he just needed to be in prayer more or reading the word more. And so he just took those off of his phone so he wouldn't even be distracted. And I was thinking, wow, I haven't even taken my social media apps off. So I think it was a good reminder to me about what do I model or how am I using my time when I have that downtime. But I think that's really interesting about the screen time. That's some food for thought for sure. Well, finally, I want to end with some fun rapid fire questions for John. So John, Tex-Mex or Texas barbecue, what would you like?
Oh, I think I'm a Tex-Mex guy. I grew up in San Antonio, so I'd go with Tex-Mex.
So are you highly scheduled or are you go with the flow and spontaneous?
Oh, gosh, I think I oscillate between the two depending on the day. So I go around. Yeah.
iPhone or Android?
iPhone.
And what did you last Google?
That's a good question. I wish I could look it up. I don't even remember what it was. Probably a coding thing. I probably sat down and tried to figure out a PHP problem.
Well, thanks, John, for being a guest on the Postmodern Realities podcast. Today's guest is John Dyer, and in the 2017 Volume 40, Number 5 issue of the Christian Research Journal, John wrote a feature article called The Virtualization of Culture and the Need for an Embodied Christian Alternative. To read more cultural discernment articles like this one, please subscribe to the journal. A 6-issue subscription is now at a new lower price of $33.50, and to subscribe, go to our website at equip.org. We'd like to hear from you, so connect with us on social media. Like the Bible Answer Man Facebook page and follow CRI, Christian Research Journal, Hank Hanegraaff, and the Bible Answer Man on Twitter. Follow the Bible Answer Man on Instagram and please subscribe to the Bible Answer Man channel on YouTube. If you like this episode, please subscribe to the Postmodern Realities podcast on iTunes and rate and review our podcast. When you rate and review our podcast, it helps others find our content. And please share this episode on your social media accounts. Be sure you tune in daily to the Bible Answer Man broadcast, hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff, who answers your questions live on air. To ask Hank a question, call 888-ASK-HANK, Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Hank is also live streaming each week on Facebook and YouTube, so check equip.org for dates and times. In addition, head to iTunes and subscribe to Hank Unplugged, Hank's new audio podcast. Follow Hank off the grid, where he has in-depth conversations with some of the brightest minds discussing topics you care about. So until our next Christian Research Journal author conversation, thanks for listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast.